happy, beautiful, hot summer evening to you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we have congratulations. I can't help it.
Oh. Thank you.
Eric is now a married man.
Oh.
No, I'm very happy.
Oh, good.
I'm just back from an eco-dharma gathering at a beautiful new center that I'll tell you about later, west of Boulder, 180 acres of gorgeousness, and 27 Buddhist teachers from mostly Denver and Boulder, and then three of us from here, gathering together to look deeply together at how we as Dharma holders and community members are bringing forth the Dharma of the clouds and stones. You know, what is the Dharma that we are hearing now? And how do we bring it to play to help? And so this will be the first, probably a little bit like salad more than soup, because it's not all cooked yet. but I wanted to just bring it to you as I can tonight. And then I'll be following up with four opportunities for conversation these next four Wednesday evenings. Apologies to anybody who can't do Wednesday evenings, but it's what I've got to really generate a conversation in Sangha about these questions, a shared inquiry. So tonight, just to wade into this territory, I want to talk to what seem like central themes. Primarily, how to create and maintain resilient community by activating our awakening way as an essential resource. Should I say that again? How to create and maintain resilient community by activating our awakening way as essential resource. So here are some thoughts about that. One is one that I think we're already dedicating ourselves to, which is to create and maintain an environment in which people not only are welcome, but are welcomed, know they are welcome, not only once, but continually. So a couple pieces of that. A, this means addressing our own suffering so that we can go deeper. But recognizing that grief work can re-traumatize people so that it matters how we do it. So an example that came to me in this retreat was somebody mentioned, you know, visiting the charnel grounds, and it brought up for me that koan in the Hidden Lamp of the seven women visiting the charnel grounds together. And at this retreat, Kriti, who was one of the leaders of the retreat, goes to India to work with farmers in the south of India in the areas that are, you know, we talk about 20 people dying, they've got millions of people dying. And she brought back a piece of coral, because we know the suffering of the coral leaves. And this piece of coral was the talking stick. And I, at one point I held that piece of coral and I said, we don't have to go any farther than this to be walking in the charnel grounds. It's right here with us. And so that was the talking stick. And so this is walking in the charnel grounds together. Yeah? With the strength of doing that together. And then second, so one, addressing our own suffering so that we can go deeper and doing it skillfully with resources. Yeah? And second, developing counsel practices, which is something that Mary's already engaging in and offering. And I brought some home with me, actually, that we used there. So that we can address the active suffering that surfaces among us, yeah. And oh, there's a C, a third, and that is practicing the creation of rituals of celebration that also include the whole, include everything, celebrating the mystery of this whole. Becoming, being and becoming, yeah. Rituals of celebration. So those three things, yeah, addressing our own suffering, developing counsel practices, practicing creation of rituals of celebration, okay, as ways that we create and maintain an environment in which people not only are welcome, but are welcomed, all. And consciously, that also means consciously addressing the places where we create separation, right? Which is part of the suffering we're talking about. So then the second, how to create and maintain resilient community that surfaced for me was recognizing the elements of resilience. And I love this article by Michael Unger about resilience, describing research on resilience. And I brought it in here before, some of you will remember that, hey, quote, resilience is not a DIY endeavor. And I loved that. Yeah. He says, think about changing environments more than about changing ourselves. We think, I'm supposed to change myself to make myself more resilient. Mm. And that turns out not to so much be what it's about. And we can identify these elements as individuals and as communities, the elements of resilience. And they are not separate from our tradition and our practices. But it helps to recognize how they are elements of resilience. So they include deepening a sense of place, helping ourselves really deeply reconnect to a sense of place. Thank you. All of you who are already helping this Sangha engage in that work. It means both. So this afternoon I had, I didn't count how many, but at least a dozen CC freshmen sitting down in sacred grounds, which was pretty cool, and as part of their orientation. That's also creating a sense of place. This place, you can come to this place, yeah? So deepening a sense of place, and I'm only just barely scratching that one, right? That's there's a lot to that. And then this wording comes from Christian Dillo from Crestone Zen Center. I sat next to Christian and it was really wonderful. We had really good conversation throughout. And he talks about creating regenerative community relationships. Mm-hmm. Creating regenerative community relationships. And that just kind of gives me goosebumps because it's going beyond, you know, anyway, you can take that wherever it goes for you. And then finding and making a place of creative incubation. A place of creative incubation. Meaning you're not productive, right? It's not trying to go anyplace. So fostering in our individual lives and in our community life, time and place for creative incubation, for being fallible, you know. And then next, so I feel like I'm going a little fast in packing stuff. Speaking of creative incubation, how not to do it. One of the things I said to the students downstairs looking at what they were engaging in with freshman orientation was, remember, you can let your meditation time be a time when you don't have to be a, you don't have to do a, you don't have to succeed. There is no way to fail, you know. 20 minutes of being completely idle, grab it. us too. So next. And I'm still talking about the means of creating the elements of recognizing and practicing the elements of resilience, right? So the next one here is really looking at how we are thinking about and seeing our situation. So I came across something that pointed out, if you see our situation as hopeless and you don't think you can affect it, you won't. If you see our situation as perilous but containing resources, you will act. And we can practice that shift when we recognize those sloughs of despond, you know, for ourselves. Next is practicing a perspective that Susan Murphy describes in her Red Thread Zen book as a fundamentally blameless reality. I think that one's really important.
A what?
A fundamentally blameless reality. To try taking on the perspective. So it's like, just try it on. You know, of a fundamentally blameless reality. Can you feel the transformative power of that at a moment when you don't have to assign blame anywhere? To practice that perspective is powerful. It frees up a huge amount of energy. And so I have a couple of quotes from this article by Katherine Ingram, which I am going to send out to you, to the whole Sangha, tonight or tomorrow. Warning, she's very plain speaking, not polemical, not hyperbole, but she socks it to you with the facts. And the facts are hard. So three little bits that came from her. One that I thought was really valuable. So I want to keep this in the context of practicing the perspective of a fundamentally blameless reality, right? So listen to this in that context. She says, you see, once you're living in an industrial technological society, choices become much more difficult. Even if you believe that cars are inappropriate, you almost cannot function without the use of a car. You can't function if you don't have a telephone or a computer, unless you retire from participation. We are all entangled in it. But, she said, I came to see that humans are just doing what we were evolutionarily designed to do. And you've heard me say that before. We are life's experiment, mm-hmm. right? There's no blame in that. We are the experiment that life is doing. We don't know how our gifts may emerge and even what they are sometimes. So she says, it's not an aberration of evolution, even though it will destroy all complex life. Nor is it the result of any one thread of evolution, any particular age or technological advancement or economic system. That's a challenging perspective, and we'll get to talk about it. But consider, what about that? What if that's so? And then, jumping a little bit, she says, to stay steady, you may be forced into a witnessing presence vast enough to contain your grief. You may acclimate to living with grief without the assumption that it should or will dissipate. Despite this or because of it, you may notice a growing tendency to appreciate simple moments of connection and many small joys. And you may feel more awake than you have for a long time. And she goes on, we live in a time when managing our attention will be all the more necessary to stay calm and to allow us to enjoy and be helpful in whatever time is left. Directing attention is a facility that becomes habitual with time, with practice. So this is interesting in contrast to what we often say, which is, don't try to boss your mind around, right? So it's interesting to hold those two in a kind of creative tension, yeah? You need times when you're not making any expectations about what your mind is doing, that time of being fallow, of creative regeneration. And left to its own conditioned patterns, our minds do get into trouble. Developing the habit of redirecting your awareness when your mind is lost in fear or troubling stories induces confidence along the way. You find that you can choose calm, you can choose gratitude, you can choose love. So I love being able to put those two things side by side. It's not necessarily an either or, right? If we are doing what Pete thinks we need to do to mature, you know, practicing the negative capability, the capability of dwelling in uncertainty, that's going to include both of those, right? It's not one or the other. And then finally, from a different author, Silver, Donald Cameron, in a book that I have up in Nova Scotia, The Living Beach, Life, Death, and Politics, Where the Land Meets the Sea. He makes this statement that I just adore. Though we may not save the earth, we can certainly serve it. And that work is profoundly worth doing. The dazzling beauty and variety of Mother Earth's creatures, of the whole web of life on this planet, is the most magnificent thing we will ever know. And it is evil not to resist its extinction. I'm feeling now how this is rather a lot to chew on. And I'm thinking that I will try to, you know, put this into written form and send it, you know, for your consideration as we launch into discussions. But are you good for a couple more points? Are you still hanging in there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. So enough yeses for me to go on. All right. So this is still in this list, which has far more than the three recommended elements. Elements of resilience, yeah? Learning how to orient together towards what matters. Learning how to orient together towards what matters. And this reminded me of Susan Murphy's statement, a vow asks that I hold myself toward life with awareness and respect. Yeah, how we practice that together seems to me connected to learning how to orient together towards what matters. Yeah, the essential matters of life and death. And then, I think this might be the last one. Yeah, we're almost there, guys. and then recognizing and activating our human gifts. I don't think we talk enough about this. Mm-hmm. I asked somebody at the retreat, what do you think humans are good for? And there was this, whoa. You know, I don't think we think about that enough in the context of contributing to life on Earth. So recognizing and activating our human gifts. So this quote from Krista Tippett, imagination is our gift as a species to move purposefully towards what does not yet exist and walk willingly through an unknown to get there. I think that's such a beautiful statement. I'll say it again. Imagination is our gift as a species to move purposefully towards what does not yet exist and walk willingly through an unknown to get there. So how do we, what does that look like? And I came across this old quote from Clarissa Pinkola Estes. The doors to the world of the wild self are few but precious. If you have a deep scar, that is a door. If you have an old, old story, that is a door. If you love the sky and the water so much that you almost cannot bear it, that is a door. If you yearn for a deeper life, a full life, a sane life, that is a door. Maybe I'll stop there. Thank you. We have some time.